Yes.
While you were still on the apologies, I raised my hand. I have
Oh, right,
forgotten.
of course. Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, no, we understand. Our colleague, Dikeledi Mashlangu, has to be elsewhere in another important meeting. She did ring me. I forgot to mention that. She'll be leaving at about, was it 6 o'clock, is it? Dikeledi?
Yes, just 6 o'clock.
Yeah,
Yes.
good. Okay. We understand. We understand. Good. Let's go for it. Professor Swilling is here, so he'll say a few words or whatever. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and greetings to the committee, greetings to the executives and staff at the DBSA. And thank you for this opportunity to report and share with you some of the gains that we've made, as well as some of the challenges that we face. As you well know, and as is covered in our report, is that our overall strategic focus is green growth and the just transition, infrastructure for economic growth and inclusion, our investments in the rest of Africa, and overall operational excellence. Some of the key highlights that the CEO will cover will refer to the fact that our disbursements in the 2022 financial year is just on 13 billion rand dispersed, 15 billion catalyzed, the infrastructure delivered 3.3 billion, and from a revenue of 5.8 billion, our return on equity is 8.8%. And our net profit 3.8 billion. As representing the board, I think I'll just briefly mention a couple of strategic priorities from the board's perspective, initiatives that are particularly impactful. The first to mention is obviously our work in setting up the infrastructure fund, which was a request from the president some years ago. To leverage 900 billion from the private sector off a fiscal allocation of 100 billion. Our ongoing support for the renewables program by the IPP office off an initial investment of 80 million. We've mobilized 18 billion of our own funding, and we're currently supporting 25 of the current projects. The D-Labs, which hasn't received much attention in the media, is a major new initiative with very substantial impacts in the poorest communities around the country. Five have been established, nearly 60 billion rand budget to launch this very significant experiment, which we're happy to discuss. And then obviously our support for the just transition. And in light of the cabinet approval of the PCC's just transition framework document, our experience over the last 10 years in this sector, as well as our ongoing support for the just transition at many different levels, brings together many of these initiatives that I've just referred to now. So we really look forward to discussing our program with you, and getting feedback on what you think our priorities should be going forward. Thank you very much, and let me hand over to the CEO for a more detailed report. Thank you.
Okay, CEO. Patrick, I'm not going to interfere now. You just, if you have other people in your team who will be speaking also on behalf of the DBSA, you'll just direct them to speak when they require to. Okay, so I won't intervene until the whole input's done. But before we move on, just to remind members that you have got Poppy Ntaka's research report, and there were some questions put at the end, which were sent to DBSA on Thursday, I think, or Friday, I think, and they will respond to that, presumably now. And then there are also further questions that were suggested by Esther Mahube, the content advisor, which might guide members also on what you might want to say. Thank you. Over then to you, Patrick.
Can you unmute yourself, sir?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you also members of the committee, and thank you to my chairman of the board as well as my colleagues. Chair, we will definitely take you through the high level, as you can see, in terms of the covering the strategy, the program's mandate and strategy of the bank, the factors informing our operational environment, the integrated approach to infrastructure development. We will also take you through the performance report, as well as the DBSA public value, as well as DBSA as an implementer of government projects we'll be working with all the spheres of government. We will also take you through the government programs that we are an implementing agent for, and also DBSA as a support of key regional initiatives, and DBSA as a social contribution to national disaster, as well as challenging in the implementation of our mandate. Briefly, Chair, by way of a background.
Patrick, sorry. Just today, will 45 minutes to an hour be enough?
Yes, more than enough.
Yeah, not more than an hour, please, right? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you. By way of background, Chair, we are a creature of statute founded in 1983 in terms of DBSA Act number 13 of 1997, amended Act number 41 of 2014. We are 100% owned by the government of the Republic. Chair, we have up to date about 100 billion of assets with 42.9 billion rand in equity that we've been able to create and increase the shareholder value with over the years. And yes, there are some rating by the global rating agencies. We are a sub-sovereign. We are currently sitting at Ba3 in terms of Moody's rating, and with an equivalent of the other three rating agencies. And we are also quite globally accredited by the Global Environmental Facility, which is called GEF, which is part of the United Nations, as well as the Green Climate Fund, which is also part of the United Nations Framework Convention on climate change. Our mandate, Chair, talks to the economic development and growth, human resource development, and institutional capacity building. We do this by mobilizing financial and other resources, both national and international, private and public sector, to drive sustainable development projects as well as programs. And this we do in the RSA as well in the rest of the Africa region. We have an integrated infrastructure strategy that looks at working with municipalities in unlocking projects. We also look at the project preparation that looks at the early stage, which serves as the tip of the spear for us in terms of our pipeline, where we look at the pre-investment phase and the feasibility study phase before actually we take projects into investability and financeability. We also do the financing of the projects in terms of the project finance, equity finance, and corporate finance, and using instruments like senior debt, mezzanine finance, as well as other structured financial solutions. We also have set up an institution called the Infrastructure Delivery Division, which was looking at the political failures across the country in terms of looking at how we could be able to work and help all three spheres of government in terms of infrastructure implementation and building. We have built schools, we have rehabilitated clinics, we have done social housing, and we've built roads across the country. We also do the facilities management as well, using the same instrument in terms of the infrastructure delivery division of the bank with clients across the continent and mainly municipalities as well as state-owned entities as well as sovereigns across the African continent. We do have PPPs in the private sector and many other projects that are driven by the private sectors. We have the sectors of water and sanitation, the transport sector, the ICT sector, the energy from generation, transmission, all the way to distribution at local government level. We also do education in terms of social sectors. We also do health as also part of social sector. as well as human settlement as part of social infrastructure. And we do strike a very delicate balance in terms of between financial sustainability as well as achieving the additionality and developmental impact. In terms of what we do, we also try to make sure that we subsidize the market three and market two municipalities, the weak ones, and we charge commercial rate for metros as well as the more commercial rate for private sector as well as commercial rates for the rest of the continent. And again, all of these have got to have the developmental impact and the additionality that we seek that defines our very existence as a development finance association. And again, our strategic pillars are inclusive economic recovery in South Africa, and as well as strategic rest of Africa lenses and doing things quite differently as a DFI. And we do this in terms of our focus area, pursuing green growth, sustainability and resilience, and strengthening infrastructure to support economic expansion as well as equitable society, as well as looking at pursuing sound the rest of Africa strategy and making sure that the risk capital that we deploy is deployed in a very carefully considered manner, because we understand the criticality of this capital, and enhancing our operational excellence to ensure our financial sustainability as a bank. And again, this talks to the liquidity and capital management in terms of the strategic actions, navigating the just transition as the sovereign has committed until 2050 of net zero emission by then, scaling up and fast-tracking infrastructure development, equity funding for transformational and economic access, integrated municipal approach, as well as building a fit for purpose DBSA, talking to the digitalization as well as the relevant skill sets of the bank. We're trying to get to the next slide. Chair, my apologies and committee members. Something seems to have frozen somewhat. I'm trying to shift forward, Chair, here. It seems to have frozen.
No, that's fine. We have got e-versions of it anyway. You can speak to it as we continue. The IT people will help to move that forward. In the meanwhile, I think we can talk to
you. Okay. Yes, Chair, we were on the strategic pillars and focus, which is slide number 7. And this we talked to, then the next one talked to DBSA strategy map, which is in the form of a balanced scorecard approach. In terms of the financial focus, it's looking at the financial sustainability, which talks to our balance sheet growth as an institution, and which talks also to the income growth for financial sustainability, as well as cost optimization to make sure that we are able to achieve our financial sustainability. And under getting that one, in terms of our client perspective, it's again being a preferred service provider for the region, as well as integrated and competitive offering to our client base, and making our infrastructure to happen for our clients. And again, under getting that one, Chair, is sustainable growth, which talks to growing quality and profitable disbursements and optimizing disbursement needs, and as well as increasing self-originated disbursement opportunities and focus municipal support, which is quite critical, particularly in South Africa, for the viability and the sustainability of the municipal infrastructure. It's not an easy environment, but it is something that is quite uppermost in our minds, Chair, and as well as increasing DBSA efficiency and effectiveness, which will ensure our relevance in the space that we operate in. And again, our critical enablers are optimal balance sheet management, purposeful empowerment, support developing, as well as high performance and accountability culture. And again, twin to the financial focus is the developmental focus, as I said earlier on, Chair, looking at the triple challenges and creating inclusive and sustainable social economic growth and reducing poverty, reducing unemployment, and reducing inequality. And again, those are undergirded by the Development Outcomes Catalyzation, which talks to a trusted government implementation, improving our municipal management systems and helping communities to get a better quality of life. And again, below those ones as levers for processes, it's talking to increasing sustainable development outcomes in South African districts, municipalities, increasing fixed capital formation, increasing sustainable developmental outputs in projects and programs, increasing the sustainable developmental impact of our disbursements, and as well as increasing sustainable development through innovation. And again, all of them are spoken into by the various enablers of effective just transition, boosting and developing key partnerships, both inside the South Africa, across the continent and internationally, and as well as adherence to key governance principles. Again, Chair, going to slide number 9, progress of strategic action. Effectively, that one is saying we are in progress and we are on track as that of June 2022, and in talking at all the areas that we are looking at strategically, the municipalities and the implementation of the district delivery model, and the future fit DBSA, as I said, talking to the digitalization and enhancing our skill sets and increasing our efficiencies and effectiveness as a DFI, and capital and liquidity, which are quite important for our own survival, just because there's one thing that we learned through COVID, that liquidity is extremely important, which is actually what made and enabled the bank to survive the impact of COVID. And again, we're looking at accelerating and improving our BBBE funding as one of the initiatives that actually are also quite on progress, scaling up and fast-tracking infrastructure, as well as the implementation of our just transition strategy. These actually are very much projects that are in progress. And yes, there are some that are somewhat lagging behind, but we're putting implementation plans or corrective actions in place to make sure that they are able to catch up by the end of the year. But we are quite comfortable, Chair, that we are in progress and we are making good progress in all this. Going on to slide number 11, operational environment. This then talks to the economic growth as we see in globally. We know that in 2021, Chair, because of the COVID impact, global economy went down by 3.1%, and we saw recovery in 2021 to 6.1%, and then the 2022 is forecast for 3.2%, and 2023 forecast for 2.9% growth. And Sub-Saharan Africa during 2020, at the outset of the pandemic, we saw a negative 1.6% economic recession. And we saw a recovery to 4.6% in 2021. We are hoping for a 3.8% growth for 2022 and nudging up to about 4% growth for 2023. And in South Africa went down by 6.4% in terms of our recession that we were faced with at the outset of the pandemic. We recovered to 4.9 in 2021. We are hoping for 2.3, and the following year we are hoping for 1.9% growth. But we all know that there are some challenges. But overall, in terms of the inflation outlook, globally it is expected that it will end up tapering. It is going to peak almost at about 6% globally, and then to then track down to eventually by 2025, we're hoping that it will reach something just under 4% globally. But in terms of the Sub-Saharan Africa, the inflation will peak at about 11.5-12% thereabout, and then it will track down to about 7% by 2025. But again, it is because we also saw the fiscal stimulus as a result of the COVID, especially in the Western countries, and then we saw the monetary authorities mopping up that excess liquidity that ended up in the market, and now we are seeing a massive and a very aggressive monetary tightening across the globe, including in South Africa, because of some of the, of first the excess liquidity that's in the market, but now the inflation that is highly driven by some exogenous factors like the geopolitical dynamics in Europe and the Russia and Ukraine matter, which is impacting on the food prices and energy prices, as well as the disruption of supply chains as a result of lockdown in China as we're trying to contend with the pandemic. Then we have our investment trajectory chair in terms of the fixed investment by sector. In terms of South Africa, we are seeing a current ratio of fixed investment to GDP at sitting at 13.8%. Our gross fixed capital formation rallied in the first quarter of 2022, increasing by 3.6%, and which is 15.4% on annualized basis, mainly driven by turnaround government investment following four quarters of contraction in private investment, while public corporation capital spending declined for the fourth consecutive quarter. As you can see, that the government infrastructure spending is expected to tick up and to then support the private sector in terms of the business enterprise infrastructure spending. But the public corporations are almost stagnant across the period. I mean, these are the kinds of things that we have to look at, how best chair we could look into also picking up the public sector or the public corporation spending on infrastructure, as it is quite important and that we maintain an above 25% fixed investment spending to be able to boost our economic growth. This chair is looking at what we do for the planning side of our integrated strategy value chain. This is looking at what we do for the municipalities and the support that we give to the, especially to the Market 2, Market 3 municipalities, which are the small and medium and rural municipalities across the country, and the assistance that we extend as the bank to try and unlock and to make them possible to access the infrastructure grant from the national government. And again, this is about the project preparation, which I called earlier the tip of the spear and a biggest enabler and value adder to our pipeline. As this is where, Chair, we have decided to spend the critical or the risk capital that is very important at unlocking projects. And this is what tends to primarily come from DFIs across the world as well as governments, as the private sector tend to be quite not interested given the inherent risk associated with the pre-investment phase of projects. And this is the phase that requires very strong and powerful skill sets to fast track projects into bankability. And this is where sometimes the project can prove to be not worth the driving forward, but it is after you have spent your money, which you will not be able to recover. But we believe that as a DFI, it is a very important investment that we must make. So this risk capital we tend to do with together with some governments as well to make sure that we unlock the projects so that they could then be fundable and then be able to crowd in and catalyze the private sector. This is where we also see the biggest catalyzation and the third party funding. When we succeed with the project prep, we then are able to create a much more higher third party catalyzed values. And this is looking at the traditional financing in terms of what we do, the bridge financing, the long-term facilities, which is senior debt, as well as the credit enhancement securitization structures like mezzanine, as well as other structured products that we do for the bank, and together with the various funding and what has been done, the approvals on the far right, it shows that what we have done since 2018, 14.5 billion rand worth of approvals, of which 9.2 progressed to commitment and 12.2 progressed to disbursements. And 2019, about 40 billion rand worth of approvals, 17 billion rand worth of commitments, and 9 billion rand in disbursements. And the same for 2022, 31.5 billion approvals with 15.4 billion disbursements. And same for 2022, sitting at 12.9, as the chair highlighted earlier on. So again, this now looks at our infrastructure delivery, the units that we set up just purely on a cost recovery basis to try and help all three spheres of government in terms of infrastructure delivery. We have built so many schools, we have rehabilitated and maintained so many clinics across the country, we have built so many roads, and we have done so many municipal infrastructure across the country. As you can see, since 2018, what actually has we have been able to do as the infrastructure delivery division. And then the next one, Chair, talks to the performance of the bank. In terms of 2021-2022 financial year, we had a total disbursement of over 13 billion, as my chairman earlier highlighted, with the value of funds catalyzed sitting at 15.1 billion, infrastructure unlocked of 2.1 billion, with infrastructure delivered by our infrastructure delivery division sitting at 3.3 billion rand. And you can see across the years what actually has been our performance, Chair. And this one. The performance report in terms of disbursements at 2019 to 2021 across the various sectors, the metros, they were sitting at about 4.5 billion rand for 2021-2022 financial year. The small and medium sized and secondary cities, we were only able to do about 44 million for 2022. You can see from 2019 what has been done, but it went down. Again, it talks to the deterioration of both skill sets as well as governance issues at these small municipalities, and the capacity has been whittling away for them to do. On the economic infrastructure, we are sitting at 3.4 billion rand for 2022. And in terms of social infrastructure, we were able to achieve about 700 million rand for 2021-2022. And the rest of the continent, we were able to achieve 4.3 billion rand worth of disbursements for the year. We were able to deliver very strong financial performance. In actual fact, Chair, for 2021-2022, we were able to achieve record financial performance levels for the bank, because you can see in 2022, the non-interest income was 276 million rand with the net interest income of about 5.8 billion rand, taking us to return on average equity of 8.8% for 2021-2022. Our sustainable earnings, Chair, reached 3.6 billion rand for 2021-2022, and our net profit was at 3.8 billion rand for 2021-2022. And our cost income ratio was sitting at 24%, which is amongst the lowest actually even globally, which is something that says as a bank we need to take more risk, and we need to be much more smarter in doing much more if we actually were to look at how we've been frugal as the bank in managing our costs, which then should be able to push us somewhat to take much more bigger risk. This looks at our asset sitting at 100 billion for 2021-22, almost the same as the previous year, because there were redemptions of certain funding actually that we had received. But again, you can see that we have been able to tick up the equity, which is the shareholder value created by the bank, of about 43 billion rand for up to 2022, and our total liabilities went down to 557.1 billion rand, with debt equity ratios of all sitting at just about under 130%. Our gearing ratio, we again, Chair, a very plausible performance under extremely difficult conditions, which calls for a lot of frugality and oversight by the board to make sure that the bank is on a very firm and sustainable footing. And in terms of the rest of in terms of both SADC as well as the rest of the Africa, our operations, you can see, Chair, that the energy is still by far the biggest exposure for the bank, sitting at about 44 billion rand, oil and gas at about 2.4 billion rand, transportation in terms of roads and drainage is still sitting at about 13.7 billion rand, communication and is sitting at about 18.8 billion, social infrastructure at 5.6 billion, water infrastructure at 2.6 billion, sanitation at about 800 million rand, commercial deals at about just under 1 billion, as well as the human resource development sitting at about 1.7 billion. And again, residential facilities at about 2.4 billion, totaling 87.6 billion rand of our total book. The rest of the continent with about 25% of the book. And their energy is at 1.7 billion, oil and gas at just over a billion rand, roads and drainage at about 2.7 billion, and communication infrastructure at about 2.8 billion, totaling 8.3 billion rand for the rest of the continent. Again, in where there are two green bonds in actual fact, where this one is, we had a green bond from PIMCO, which is a U.S. Asset management, one of the biggest in the world, with 200 million, which is about 3 billion rand, which actually came at a very critical period for us. And these were for certain assets in terms of the green or sustainable assets like solar PV and concentrated solar panels. 9 projects totaling about 629 megawatts. One wind project with 94 megawatts generation capacity, and then one hydro with just over 2,000 megawatts, and then other electricity related in terms of rehabilitation of the infrastructure, meters and water, 3 projects and the very digital nature. In terms of the value, the financial support to municipalities over the years, Chair, as you can see, we went as far back as 2012 to 2022. You can see what actually the bank was able to disburse in a total value of about 41.1 billion from 2012-2021. And about 7 billion of that went to the secondary and under-resourced municipalities over the same period. And 1.3 of disbursement was the development bond to metro, to the metro municipalities. And the funding was for electricity, water, sanitation, ICT, and asset management sectors. And again, the non-financial support that we give primarily to the market, to market 3 municipalities over the years, with 60 projects in total, with the value of 6.4 billion rand of infrastructure that we're able to unlock for completed projects as master plans in various municipalities. So it's quite a steady improvement, and we would love to do much more. But again, it is a capacity that we offer to municipalities to make sure that we are able to really bridge the gap on the skill sets, and we all know, Chair, that we can be able to, we really can be able to do much more, but we also need to work very closely with the various government departments as well as COPTA and National Treasury to really unlock our the full potential in this space. As we can see that the infrastructure is really deteriorating at municipal level. The note also continue with the non-financial support to municipalities. And again, we have assisted the market to market three municipalities to implement and complete about 254 projects from 2014 to 2022. And again, we have constructed and completed about 59 boreholes as part of the COVID-19 interventions projects during the COVID-19. And again, continuing with the non-financial support for municipalities, Chair, we over 15,500 temporary jobs were created as a result of the implemented support given to municipalities since 2014. And again, household benefiting sitting at just over a million over from 2014 to 2022, with 2022 sitting at just over 200,000 households benefiting as a result of our support. And again, infrastructure plans translating to projects on the ground. These are the municipalities, Chair, and given the various sectors of water and sanitation, electricity, roads, their CAPEX program, stormwater, and again, the values in each that we have actually been working with. Next one. And again, another one, a continuation of the same, totaling the 5.6 billion rand of infrastructure in all these municipalities. And again, TBSA is an implementer of government projects through our infrastructure delivery division. And 2022, we're sitting at 3.3 billion rand. And since 2014, we have actually delivered infrastructure to the level of 25.1 billion. So really, we're quite proud of the record that we've been able to achieve and leveraging and hiring the special skill sets in terms of engineering skill sets from the private sector, and then deploying the skill sets to help government and also to fast-track procurement, while at the same time maintaining very strict procurement protocols. This now talks to the development impact from infrastructure delivered, Chair, over the period. We have completed about just over 740 new and 579 refurbished schools between 2012 to 2022. And a total of 116 municipal projects were completed between 2017 and 2022. A total of 402 health facilities were completed between 2012 and 2022. This is both national as well as provincial health facilities. And again, Chair, continuing with what we have been able to do with IDD, a total of 7,576 SMEs and subcontractors have benefited from the infrastructure for the delivered by the bank from 2014 to 2022 to the value of 4.7 billion. Right? And again, just under 80,000 job opportunities were created by the bank since 2014 to 2022. While delivering infrastructure as an implementing agent. This now talks to the D-Lab that the chairman was talking about, a new baby and a new something that we feel has got a massive potential, Chair, really to do much more and to create jobs and to unlock very promising projects and businesses for communities and of various opportunities for youth. We now have five such projects across the country and working with various social partners in South Africa as well as international. It is really, really becoming extremely attractive. Even our IPG, the international partner groups that pledged the $8.5 billion to South Africa at COP26, they are also looking at this D-Lab concept for many parts of the country, particularly Mpumalanga as well. So far, we have one in Cape Town, one in KZN, two in Gauteng, and one in Waterberg in Limpopo. We are rolling them across the country. We are hoping that we'll be able to reach each and every corner of the country. So it is giving us very fascinating insights into what is possible within South Africa. We are very positive at the possibilities that really could be created and unlocked using our D-Lab concept. This now is talking to us as an implementer of government projects again. And again, the collaboration and support to DECOG, the district development model and the three pilot sites, the OR Tambo, Waterberg and Ekwini have been successfully delivered, and about 210 billion rand worth of catalytic projects have been identified. And the one-plan information management system for the three pilot sites, they have all been completed. Ekwini, yes, is operational and big with 50% of its approach staff complement, but broad challenges with program include quite a lot of engagement and discussion between the Department of COCTA as well as National Treasury. And again, we know that unblocking an intergovernmental relation challenges the poor stakeholder engagement across the various spheres of government, because the DDM was supposed to be an integrator and a convergence point between all three spheres of government for any plans within any sphere of government. But we know that this actually has proven quite political at certain times, but we made some progress with the DDM and such that now the Department of Cooperative Government and Traditional Affairs, they want actually to also now start taking full control of the DDM, and we are happy to help them and to make sure that the handover is quite smooth and that they continue to succeed. It's quite critical. And I think of critical importance would be the maintenance of the various skill sets that we were able to attract as the bank to come and work in this part. And we're hoping that it won't be the repeat of the project here at the Manjo, where when government took over the project and we saw a massive exodus of the professionals and leaving the project and therefore collapsing the project. We hope that we'll be able to avoid that in the DDM as the Department of COCTA begins to take it over. And again, as my chair earlier highlighted, I chair the infrastructure fund that we've been able to put blocking and also achieving approvals of their budget funding from various governments. And we are quite positive that given the right support, we really can be able to unlock the infrastructure delivery across the country with this blended financing approach of the IF. And as a bank, we are paying about 50% of the IF, which together with National Treasury, we have committed about 250 million rand over the next 5 years as the bank to make sure that this succeeds, Chair. Again, Chair, you will also recall that there's a DBSA, the nucleus of the IPP office that we still continue to support and manage on behalf of the Department of Minerals and Energy, together with National Treasury. And we take a very strong pride in the success of IPP. And we do believe that we definitely can be able to do much more. And we have supported a number of projects in terms of the risk management mitigation independent power producer program around initiated by the IPP office. And again, progress is being made on reaching financial close on 25 projects submitted for the current round. And we are supporting the round 6 bidders, which opened in April 2022. The water sector program, Chair, this is again the national water sector program that was approved in September 2022 in support of the national master plan for water and sanitation. We are engaging with the Department of Water and Sanitation as well as National Treasury and COCTA to sign a master framework agreement for implementation of this program. And again, we've entered the recruitment phase for this program to capacitate for technical, financial and procurement work streams. We're working quite close and very well with the Department of Water and Sanitation, Chair. I think we're quite positive that I think it could be one of the very successful programs that we will be implementing with the Department of Water and Sanitation. And again, the Ekwini Climate Intervention, the Special Restructuring and Environmental Protection is one of the 6 transformational focus areas for the one plans in terms of the district delivery model. The Ethiopian One Plan places emphasis on the new trajectory of climate change and as well as the just transition and smart city focus as well as smart society. So I think you will be able to see quite a lot of development taking place around the Etegwini Metro. Opportunities for a better generation. This is now the energy generation, as the president actually put that 100 megawatts, and the small scale embedded generation being explored in all municipalities under the district delivery model, including Etegwini. And again, this embedded generation, we are sourcing funding from the Green Climate Fund of the United Nations, and to try and really unlock, because it's very cheap funding for quite a long term, which then actually makes us to catalyze quite a lot and to unlock very, very promising projects that are also for climate smart projects. This looks at our involvement in the regional initiatives. Chair, I mean the SADC Gas Master Plan, together with the SADC Secretariat, IDC and the ENH of Mozambique, we are engaging on helping them with their Gas Master Plan. The Southern African Power Pools, again, this is for the transmission lines across the SADC to enable actual generation from any country and the wheeling of power intra-regionally. And there is a massive opportunity in this case, Chair, but it is something that really needs a lot of working and a lot of harmonization of regulation as well to make sure that we really can be able to unlock the security of energy. As we all know that the energy per capita on the continent is way too low and we need to do much more. There are also other projects that we are working with SADC on to try and see if we can succeed. The post office association initiatives within SADC is looking at how we can leverage and use technology to make the post offices much more successful. As in the Western countries, they have proven to be quite successful, but it's going to require a lot of skill sets and systems and investments to make it really to work. And again, Port Management Association of Eastern and Southern Africa, the PMESA, Lake Tanganyika initiatives, and again, this is where we are working with the regions as well. The Namibian PPP Project Preparation Fund, as you know, that Namibia is one of the countries globally that are driving the green hydrogen projects out of Walvis Bay, and there has been a massive interest, and we are looking also at partnering with them in this case as well as South Africa. And again, there is also a Namibian PPP hospital project that we're also working with, together with the sister DFIs and the government of Namibia as well. Our contribution to national crisis, Chair, we really, as a bank, we approve about 150 million rand to intervene for COVID-19 purposes, and we have about 121 letters to spend to date. And 29.5 million rand that actually is committed but undrawn. But this actually cuts across. We can see that this actually spoke to the National Disaster Management Center with COCTA, with, as the DBA said, we contributed 15 million. The provision for screening units in South Africa, about 4 million, consumable for 25 district municipalities. We spent 6 million rand. Provision for isolation ports, 14.8 million. Provision of testing capacity support working with CSIR about 20.1 million. Support for government research and technology innovation about 33.6 million. And the support to SADC member states about just under 20 million. We deployed over 120.65 million within overall. But again, our response to the recent flood disasters, both in KZN as well in the Eastern Cape, the worst affected region in KZN as the Cape Winnie, Idembe District, Ugu, the King Echwayo, Amajuba, and Nkungundlo. And in the Eastern Cape, it was Afrizo, Jokabi, Artambo, Krisane, Amatole, as well as the Port St. John's. and the main infrastructure tab that was affected by the flood in Dominican Republic, the social infrastructure, this is talking to schools, health facilities, communities, facilities, and the economic infrastructure in terms of national and provincial roads, bridges, ports, and electrical infrastructure, and municipal infrastructure in terms of roads, bridges, stormwater, drainage, electricity, as well as water supply. And again, in the Eastern Cape, I mean, in total, you can see that on water interventions, KZN had about 43.5 million, Eastern Cape 21 million, total is 64.5, community mobility of bridges 20 in the Eastern Cape, and the replacement of housing, 28 houses in KZN, 4 in the Eastern Cape, these are the 28 million spent for replacement of housing in KZN, 4.2 million in the Eastern Cape, totaling a total of 32.2 million there, sub-totaling 71.5 for KZN, 45.2 million for Eastern Cape, totaling both 116.7 with contingency of 11.7 million rand, the grand total of 128.4 million rand. That was our support in terms of the disasters in the recent flood. And again, matters affecting implementation of mandate, I'm getting to the end chair here, and governance and oversight framework, we are handling and engaging with National Treasury in this regard. And the issue of remuneration policy is quite a delicate balance to try and maintain high skill sets within the bank, and also taking into account that we are a public sector institution. But at the same time, we are competing with the commercial banks for these skill sets. And if we do not then maintain the competitiveness of our remuneration for the high skilled individuals, knowing where we come from as the bank in 2012, Chair, we will find ourselves having lost quite a number of critical skills and being back to the drawing board. But at this point in time, we are working, trying to find each other to see how we can be able to strike that delicate balance. And again, foreign borrowing limits, we are engaging with the National Treasury in this regard. And again, the new DFI scorecard is impacting in terms of our BEE rating. We were sitting at the rating of 1, but when we were told that we need to then not align with the commercial banks and we need a special dispensation, we have since written to both the Minister of Finance as well as the Minister of Economic Development, Trade and Competition Commission as well to give us that special dispensation. We are spending all the requisite investment in all the various elements of the BEE, but we can only be able to realize the full benefits if we then are managed accordingly in terms of the dispensation that is supposed to be in place according to the rating agency. And again, the construction mafia and the rogue units and the vandalism actually taking place across the country with its genesis in Etiquette is proving quite a challenge across the country because it has been spread across the country. And it is really, really a serious delay and a massive risk because some of these guys come brandishing assault rifles and they really spill blood and keep people on site. But it is one of the critical challenges, and we are hoping that the law enforcement agencies are really going to work with us in really maintaining law and order. But sometimes these guys don't even listen nor respect a court order. So they then just come and meet serious violence to the site if they're not given their 30%. And the challenge is they want the 30% and most of them don't even want to work for the 30%, which is almost like equating to extortion, so to speak. Again, looking at opportunities, we do believe that facilitating and driving infrastructure-led economic recovery is quite important for the economy of South Africa and recovery of our economy. Leveraging multilateral and BRICS, bilateral and grant funding for infrastructure. We work very closely with BRICS. We even have lines of credit with BRICS as well. And diversifying sector investment, we believe, is quite important, and it's an important opportunity. Seeking self-generated and strategic infrastructure funding opportunities and participating in the just transition for the 2050 net zero emission. And again, the challenges of domestic and regional macroeconomic weaknesses as the tightening of the monetary authorities across the world is proving quite difficult. And we are even anticipating some default by some of the countries because they were quite indebted, but we're happy to see Zambia now being granted by the IMF, they were given. And the high cost of funding for the bank is also quite a challenge, given that our debt capital market hasn't fully come back as yet. It was completely annihilated during the COVID. The post-COVID effects on clients and projects, and we know that some clients and some project funds are still wobbling, given the post-lockdown, and the increased competition in the municipal finance environment is something that actually we're working very hard on, especially the possibilities of the BEE rating as well. The credit quality deterioration, particularly the net the non-performing loans on the African continent, are also proving quite a challenge. That takes me to the end, Chair. I hope I delivered as I promised, Chair.
No, very much so. No problem at all. You and Professor Suling were within the 1 hour, right? About that time. Thank you very much. Is there no member of your team wants to add anything or say anything or come in at all?
I'm sure with the time of questions, Chair, there might be.
Oh, right. Okay, no problem.
Thank you.
All right. Yes. Okay, then we go to Dikeledi Mashlango, who's got a question. I don't see any other hand up, surprisingly. Dennis Ryder, who else? Well, for now, it's only two. Oh, there's a third hand, Maletane. Who else? No. Okay. Well, people can come in when they do. Right, let's go. Over
Thank
to
you.
Dikeledi.
Thank you, Chair. Just wanted to have my bite before I excuse myself from the meeting. Let me start by appreciating and welcoming the presentation from the BSA. And I will start by the last question that I have on my list. The fact that you are having engagement or serious engagement in as far with the Department of Water and Sanitation, I think it gives one a hope to a certain extent, while my expectations would have been to hear from you how far are you in terms of that engagement, because my focus or my interest is to see the implementation and being able to deal with the issue of or the challenge of water that is facing the poor of the poorest. I hear that you are mentioning provinces in as far as figures, your budget as you intervene, but more especially the provinces which were affected by the floods. But I would want to have a situation whereby we are told as to how far are you, because also you are mentioning that you are working closely with COCTA and supporting them on the district development model. How far are you? Because really the municipalities are being challenged. We have many municipalities that are facing challenges and would like to see the end result or an improvement that is going to have a positive impact on the poor. Having said that, Chairperson, I would like to know the current relationship between the DPSA and BRICS Bank that they are having. And just to have an understanding of their relationship. I further want to know if there are any overlapping mandates since the BRICS Bank is also tasked with the economic and the social infrastructure development. I'm saying this because your discussion or your engagement with the Department of Water and Sanitation, you are trying to deal with the challenges that they are facing. And we know the major challenge mostly is the aging or the bad status of the infrastructure. And also in terms of energy, hence we are experiencing this load shedding and stuff. So one will want to wait. I hear you are talking with confidence. You're sure of you believe that you will be able to deal with these challenges. I just don't know how much time do we have, and how far can we wait. So with that, Chairperson, I'll reserve my other questions and just these important questions. How far can we reap from what you're engaging on? Because really this affect the country negatively, not undermining the role that you're playing in terms of the economic situation that we are facing, trying to improve this, the economic status. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks. Okay, you know the order. It's Dennis, and then Simon Molitane, and then it's Njadu, who sent me a note to say he's having some IT problems, but he will also raise some questions. Okay, Dennis and Simon and Njadu. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, everybody. Nice to have a morning in the constituency for a change. On a Tuesday. But thanks to the Development Bank for the presentation and some promising signs coming out of it. There seems to be a little bit of good news here. So I hope it'll stand up to scrutiny. But thank you very much. And if indeed things are looking up, well done. I think we're still sitting with a kind of a conflict identity crisis, if you will, trying to work out whether you're a true DFI or a DFI operating in a commercial space. And I think it's a difficult space. I don't think we've got the answer yet. I think we're still quite far away from an answer on that. But in terms of that, I think that perhaps you can help us kind of draw those issues out as you're giving your replies. And specifically, I want to talk about the infrastructure to start with. The infrastructure focus that you spoke about as a result of the president's call to unlock all of those big amounts of money that you mentioned. Now, obviously, I'd like to understand a little bit about the mechanics of how it's rolling out, because I think that the local government space is a very difficult one to get enmeshed in when it comes to lending people money. And certainly, we've seen in many instances where local municipalities are not able to repay their debt. And are certainly reneging on arrangements with their bulk service providers. So I just like to understand a little bit better. How are you finding your customers in amongst local government? Because obviously you've got a competitive situation. So and in terms of the PFMA, I think that you guys have to, you have to go through the same process as everyone else. So where you've got a good credit risk in terms of a local government entity, excuse me, what you find is you find yourself actually competing with the big commercial banks. And I was wondering how you are able to compete. How's that working out for you? But are you also targeting some of the guys that the commercial banks are not wanting to get into bed with because of fear of risk? And realistically, I think it is something that one would need to take into account. So how are you managing that space? How are you identifying your projects and which borrowers you want to lend money to? How are you dealing with that tender process? And certainly, perhaps you can tell us, and that's something that we're also responsible for, is looking for the impact of legislation in practicality. So what are the issues around the PFMA that you are finding problematic in terms of fulfilling your mandate? Perhaps you can give us a little bit of around that. A little late in your presentation, you mentioned bridging finance. Now, as an old banker, you know, there's nothing more permanent than bridging finance, is what my credit colleagues always used to tell me. But is Treasury part of the process when you are agreeing to provide bridging finance with the various entities? Because I do think that often Treasury is not holding back because of bloody mindedness, but because of other issues. Or are you finding that this is merely a better way of consolidating 2 or 3 years worth of grant funding into one quick big bang project? Perhaps you can tell us a little bit more about that. I was a bit disappointed to see only 44 million rand for secondary cities has been disbursed in the 2022 year that you showed. Now, I was wondering, because you didn't make it clear if that's the full financial year or a year-to-date number, although the other numbers that you were reporting all looked very close to their previous levels. So it was quite a substantial drop. I think certainly if one is looking for impact and in terms of risk aversion as well, one would certainly prefer to work with some of the metros, I think. But then again, the development that we are needing is often in the secondary cities. And those are the guys that are not able to access the commercial funding. So, but disappointing that perhaps you can talk about around that. I think the ROE was something I specifically wanted to highlight because, that's certainly showing the proper trend. Still far off some of the commercial banks, but that's probably a good thing. I just wanted to say that those ROE numbers are looking substantially better than they have in the past. Well done. And then, the comment on the district development model, I couldn't let it go unanswered, although it's a very political space, and I'm not sure that it's a discussion you necessarily want to get into. But you spoke about the fact that you were having some issues about unblocking some of the communication and the issues there. And I mean, you know, don't be surprised, because the fact is that it's the district development model is at this stage as clear as mud to all observers. No one understands properly what is being done. And the noises that are being made point to an unconstitutional reallocation of powers and functions. So, of course, you're going to find a little bit of animosity and reluctance to engage when you go into a municipality. It's like the farmer going into the turkey shed around Christmas time and expecting some idle chit-chat. Thank you, Chair. I will leave it there for now.
Simon,
Thank you, Chairperson, good day to everyone. Let me follow my colleagues to welcome the presentation. On your presentation, you spoke about the municipalities that you are busy assisting in terms of in order to fight the issue of shortage of water. So I just want to check with you whether any municipalities in the Free State who did ask for any assistance in terms of water availability, except those two municipalities that you have mentioned, the Letsimeng and Mafube. Secondly, you talked in terms of assisting the post office to revive it, which really is true that post offices, they are collapsing. I just want to find out how far is the initiative in order to revive the post offices. Thank you, Chairperson.
Njadu, are you connected?
Yes, Chairperson.
Go ahead, please.
Yes, thank you very much. Good afternoon. And let me also follow Chair to welcome the presentation from DBSA. I think my first point, Chair, will be to check what are the challenges, lessons learned, and achievements. The following question will be in terms of those challenges and lessons learned for DBSA. Is DBSA satisfied that it is on track to deliver on its developmental mandate? And is the bank in the continent in getting value for money in projects and programs funded? So the question in initiative is that in terms of the challenges and lessons learned and achievements, do you believe that you are on track in terms of the projects that you are delivering? Then the second one, Chairperson, is that the committee previously recommended that in the light of a huge provincial inequalities, DBS should have an active policy for reducing such a gap. The committee further encourages closer cooperation with SALGA, COCTA, and houses of traditional leaders and councils in the interest of intergovernmental relations. Now, Chairperson, what is the progress made in regards of that, in terms of what the committee have raised previously? So lastly, Chairperson, is to get some feedback from DBSA on support, funding in infrastructure investment, technical provided to the rural local municipalities in the last financial year. So, Chairperson, that will be my questions. Thank you very much.
Nkululeko, is there anybody else? I can't see anybody else with hand up. I don't see anybody else.
There's no other hand.
Well, I don't have much to say, colleagues, comrades. I mean, I think most people have covered in different ways some of the things I want to say. One of the issues that arises all the time is the issue that Dennis raised about to what extent is the DFI and what is it, as he puts it, DFI operating in the commercial space. This has arisen because over the years, many, many years now, not least, in the local government sphere, there's complaints that the interest rates charged and a whole lot of other fees and whatever are not dissimilar, if you like, or not significantly lower than what the commercial banks charge. Sometimes it's even claimed that it's more expensive than going to DBSA than going to the commercial banks. I think those issues have been addressed in some or other form, but it's never clear. Secondly, I don't agree, of course, it is right to say, Dennis's view that it's as clear as mud, the district development model. He does raise some issues about, how consistent the policy approach is to the distribution of powers and functions as set out in the Constitution. I too have wondered about that, but I haven't done enough work around this or looked at it keenly enough to be able to say, but presumably COCTA would not be, and government would not be so foolish as to tread there. Not least because, the municipalities themselves, led by the governing party, are not going to easily concede any powers and functions. Well, well, many of them won't, I think. Maybe I'm wrong. So maybe you would respond more to that issue. Well, what I sense is that, and Poppy raises about Integrini and when things are going, and you've responded, Patrick, but it would be nice to add a bit more about where exactly, like at some stage you explained the problems, you know, the time it took between COFTA and Treasury to sort out differences and so on and so on, the need for educating councillors, presumably, and staff about what this all means. Now, obviously, those things take time. But the overall sense I have, I mean, you presented like four bullet points there. I felt, yeah, they're giving broad like direction. They're like slightly abstract, if you like. Where are things from your point of view? COFTA might divulge, you're independent, you have your own views. But where are things really with this district development model? You know, on a scale of 10, what is the progress? Could you, it's a very arbitrary way of putting it, but is it like 2 out of 10 at the moment, or 4 or 5, or what? Then a point raised by our content advisor, which I think is very good, actually. She makes the point that, you know, yeah, we've had several downgrades, but somehow DBSA manages to stay afloat. You don't go down when the country as a whole does. So, you know, you are performing well. I think everybody acknowledges that. In fact, you know, frankly, I think it's true to say that as DFIs go, look, I don't know enough about other DFIs. Let me be cautious. Let me put it this way. As public entities go in the broad sense, which appear before us, you do perform very well, actually. Some might say, well, using other public entities in our country is hardly a measure, no barometer. So it's not hard to do better, but I don't think that's really true. I do think you do well overall, and we've consistently, I think, both in the National Assembly side in the past 5 years and now again, have recognized the, and we've asked you as well, you'll recall, Patrick, I'm not sure that Mark was board chair at the time or he was at those meetings. You gave some reasons about why things work for you and what lessons might be drawn from your own experience. Not that you can crudely translate it to other public entities. Then another matter raised has been around, you know, I think this is the last time you were with us, about how the land bank and its problems have the sort of contagion effect and reduce your credibility and your ability to be credible in the market and so on, has that receded? And, you know, we asked this of you before, but now this is some while later. What is the actual relationship, if any, between the land bank and the DBSA? Apart from that, you would have received from our committee secretary in Kulele Kumangweni our research support staff's overview of the bank, and she makes some observations there that you have responded to in different ways, but she also says that, well, let me just read to you. I don't want to like extrapolate from what I read. Let me just tell you what she says that I just wanted to ask you a bit more about. So she says, well, of course, she talks about you reducing substantially irregular and fruitless expenditure, getting clean audits, which is great. And then she says, across all the key strategic objectives, there is evidence of underperformance of some financial performance indicators of concern, she says, is the persistent underperformance of the quotation marks here, value of projects prepared and committed, uncode and open code value of funds catalyzed, close code performance indicators, which also underperformed in 2019 and 2020. But she notes that generally DBSA performed well on indicators relating to economic transformation and gender mainstreaming. Then on the just transition, can you say a bit more than you have? I come across this, and I'm sure other members do, in various forums. and you get quite different points of view where things are. And, you know, I can't personally tell where things are. Each time you listen to somebody, they sound credible, then, you know, somebody else gives a different point of view, and it sounds credible. But this is a very big issue, finding all these balances that are required to make the transition just. Enormously difficult, I know. But can you say a bit more about that, Patrick, and your team, and Mark and your team? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair and committee members. And definitely on the last one, I would also have the Chair of the Board also coming in, Chair. If I may start from the beginning, I know member Masangu was talking about, referred to the Department of Water and Sanitation Engagement. I will ask my colleague Muhale Rakhatia of Infrastructure Fund to come in there, Chair, and then I will come in on the others. Muhale, can you come in?
Thank you, CE, and good afternoon, Chair, as well as the members of the committee. Regarding the partnership with the Department of Water and Sanitation, actually we have made significant progress since the beginning of the current calendar year, you know, with the DG being appointed late last year. We actually have the MOA signed. It was signed 2.5 months ago. It's a tripartite MOA between the department, DWS, and SAGA as the representatives of the municipalities, as well as the DBSA. And the idea is to build capacity in order to support the underlying municipalities and water boards, as well as some of the national entities that work in the water sector, like TCTA, in order to, you know, design and develop, prepare and implement the programs. So that partnership is in place in terms of the MOA, and we have actually secured operational budget to run the, you know, the operations of the partnership. You know, we secured funding from National Treasury, and actually some of the funding comes from the Green Climate Fund, which the CEO talked about as one of the entities that have accredited DBSA. We are also having a governance structure in place in the form of an oversight committee consisting of executives from the three institutions. What we are busy with now is the recruitment process to get the head of the partnership office, you know, appointed. We were actually discussing it this morning. The plan is to have the person in place by November. So it's a live partnership, you know, initial stages, and we hope that we'll begin to see actual work coming out of it. But at the same time, we have had as the infrastructure fund, through our collaboration with the Department of Water and Sanitation, a very good pipeline, which we have taken through the approval processes. And here I'm talking about projects such as the Umgomaz project being implemented by TCTA on behalf of the department in KZN. It's a 24 billion capital value we are mobilizing as the infrastructure fund. 12 billion of that because of our close relationship with the department. We also have a number of projects in various areas like Limpopo with the water board there for 4.5 billion, again supported by the department's sponsorship. We have Magalis Water in the Northwest with two projects worth around 1 billion together, which we are also getting approval for in the current phase of the approval processes. We also have Lanseria Wastewater Treatment Plant project, working closely with the City of Joburg and and the Department of Water Affairs and Sanitation to get the project implemented. So the relationship with the department has begun to bear fruits, which are really tangible from our perspective. It can only be enhanced going forward with the partnership office being operationalized, staffed, and a pipeline of projects mainly coming from the municipalities, which are undercapacitated, lack skills, resources. The idea is to then have them with the heavy lifting to ensure that those projects can be implemented. I thought I should come in there because the presentation was a bit scant in relation to that aspect. Thank you very much, Chair and the CEO.
Thank you, Mohale. And again, Chair, Ms. Matlango also asked about COGTA and the DDM and around the flood damages. We have Chuchaka Mhlongo here who works on the DDM and he steers the DDM on behalf of TVS. Wabujomane, can you come in just to give your members more on what we have been able to done in terms of details, understanding the limitations of time as well? Is Chuchaka here? Chuchaka? I'm not seeing him here. But Mr. Chair, let me come in on that one. As we said, that we have spent about 128 million rand to help the two provinces that were damaged by the recent floods, both the KZN and the identified municipalities, as well as the Eastern Cape and the identified municipalities. We supported them on a number of infrastructure and housing and as well as water projects to help them to deliver and to restore those damaged infrastructures and facilities. And we continue to work with them, Chair, on a number of other projects. So in terms of the DDM, Chair, it is a political issue. But as the bank, we have really, really worked well with COGTA in finalizing the one plan for the three pilot district municipalities, including Ethekwini Metro. And yes, it's going to be very difficult because there are a number of struggling issues ranging from the powers that local municipalities have vis-a-vis the districts, as well as the powers that the provinces have vis-a-vis the local municipalities and districts, as well as national vis-a-vis the other spheres of government. It becomes quite a challenge to navigate, and it's not easy to usurp people's powers when they know that actually they are legislatively given those powers. And I think that is what inherently will make the traction of the DDM somewhat of a bigger challenge, but we have made some headways. We have put together, we have submitted the one plans for all, as we highlighted, that we also have identified the projects to the value of about 210 billion in the three pilot districts. And I think that now says those projects will require further project prep or feasibility studies to make sure that they are driven to the investability or the bankability stages. But some progress has been made, but it is not an easy area to navigate given the inherent politics that tends to be associated with these spheres of government and local municipalities. Yes, we are also working with SALTA in this case and also the traditional affairs part of COGTA. But we do believe that going forward, as we are rolling these projects to other districts, we will be able actually to use the lesson learned in the three pilot districts and see how best things could be navigated. But we are hoping that at the national level that the COGTA is going to be able to lead much more stronger, having learned from the pilot projects. The issue of of the DBSA operating as a commercial bank, I think it's a very interesting one. We still do regard ourselves as a development finance institution. I think the difference between ourselves and the commercial banks is that we do take the long term end of projects, because we can fund projects for up to 30, 40 years, when the commercial banks can only fund projects up to 7 years, given the limitations of the Basel III and the limitations of the Banks Act. But they also, I think, Chair, I hope and members, you will also appreciate that as the DFI, unlike other DFIs in other parts of the world, like in Europe, Brazil, China, and others, those are receiving ongoing budget support from their national governments to then be able to do projects much more stronger, because in that case, you can then be able to do much, much, much more than you currently are doing. And in our case, we do not receive any budget allocation from government. We have to survive from the return that we generate from the commercial project that we do. But we still nonetheless do fund and do work with the under-resourced municipalities, the Market 2 and Market 3 on a cost recovery, sometimes on a subsidized basis, and maybe then try and charge more when it comes to the metros as well as the private sector projects. But for us to be truly a DFI in terms of taking much more higher risk, because even in terms of our DBSA Act, we're only limited to 2.5 times in terms of our gearing. But other institutions that are oversighted by the SABs, DFIs, they can be able to take much more higher risk and be able to do much more. But as the bank, we are also pursuing some of these issues with both National Treasury and as well as the Reserve Bank, to see how we can be able to be enabled to take much more higher risk, but at the same time being oversighted by a Reserve Bank, given the fact that they can be able to oversight us as a DFI, not as a commercial bank. And I can quote examples here of the KfW of Germany, AFD of France, the BNDES in Brazil, CDB of China. They are also regulated by and oversighted by their reserve banks, but they are able to take much more higher risk, and they are DFIs, because you also do not want to create an untenable risk for the country, because then you need to make sure that when you take much more higher risk, you are able to be oversighted by an institution or an authority that has what it takes to make sure that you don't create unnecessary risk for the country and for the financial systems as well. But in terms of whether we are more expensive than commercial banks, it depends, because we do submit tenders for funding for metros and local municipalities, and we do come out actually and do win some of the bids, and in some cases we lose them to commercial banks as well, as you know that they are deposit taking and they can be able to be much more competitive. But we still nonetheless are a sustainable financial or development finance institution, and we continue to be efficient. We continue to try and manage our risk as frugal and as efficient as much as we possibly can. It is a something that we would love to be done much more differently, because we do believe that the challenges facing South Africa do require quite a lot of risk taking from the DFIs like ourselves especially. And we take much more risk in South Africa than we do take risk in the rest of the continent, Chair and committee members. But again, we also know that there are massive challenges in terms of the municipalities in the country. I think you can make reference to the AG's report in terms of the governance and the internal control challenges in municipalities. I do believe, this is my personal view, Chair, that we really can be able to look at how we can leverage on technology to try and improve some of the internal controls in municipalities and compensate for the lack of skill sets in municipalities, and look at how best we can be able to leverage the skill sets that we do have. But I think our municipal system and local government system does require some element of review to see how we can be able to sustain municipalities given the current challenges that they are faced with, and the infrastructure is continuing to deteriorate, and we might have to look at how best we can be able to arrest such a deterioration of infrastructure and making sure that you can be able to account for each and every rand that actually is spent on this infrastructure in a manner actually that does not reflect elements of wastefulness and elements of corruption in other cases. But again, as you all say, that the skill set and the capacity in some municipalities explains quite a number of the challenges that we get to experience at local municipalities. But it is a matter that we have to look at. But in terms of, as Mr. Dennis Ryder asked, in terms of the PFMA challenges, it is a challenge, but we do take it as it is what it is. How we wish we could be able to do things much more efficiently, as long as there is strong governance, as long as we can be able to assure that we will still adhere to very strong governance, because sometimes you can be limited when actually you have to comply and others don't have to comply. It becomes a very unfair competitive landscape, but we know that it was put in place for a reason. We have engaged National Treasury, Ministry of Finance, in this regard to see how can we better be accommodated to make sure that we are able to be much more competitive and to be much more nimble-footed and to be much more efficient, whilst at the same time ensuring that there is no wasteful or corruption or any weakness in internal controls. But I think it is something that will require or necessitate engagement and review, and maybe certain pilots being made by the national government and legislature like yourselves to see how we can be able to better capacitate and support a government institution to do their work in a manner that still will assure you that the governance will still be adhered to and that we won't be wasteful with the public resources. I know it's a very wrong time to say such things, as we know the experiences that actually are currently are on the tables or in courts as we speak. It becomes quite a difficult request to even begin to make. But we do believe that we can be able to make certain exceptions, and maybe starting with pilots and see how things can work, and looking how other countries are contending with such challenges. But I guess it's work in progress, and we will see as we work with these challenges and see how far they can take us. But in terms of the rest of the continent, I must say that even in terms of the impairments, yes, the rest of the continent, the risk is much more higher, and yes, because of the high risk, the returns are also much more higher, but we are quite frugal in our risk management systems that we put in place, and we continue to put such to make sure that we do not make a reckless decision in our lending. And I must say that to date we have been proven quite well that our risk management systems are strong enough to mitigate and to make sure that the sustainability of the bank is not compromised. Chair, I know that yes, the 44 million for under-resourced municipalities for 2021-2022, we could have loved it actually much more higher than that. Yes, it was 4.5 billion for the metros. I guess it's also a function of these municipalities, because as you know, Mr. Ryder, that we have to submit tenders. Some of the tenders we win, some of the tenders we lose, because in certain cases we're not competitive enough in our tendering system. Sometimes these municipalities don't even come to the market given the limitation in their skill sets. But it is something that we continue to work on, and we continue to put much more support for these municipalities to unlock much more higher funding and to unlock the access to infrastructure grant from National Treasury. And again, I do appreciate and I admit that it is definitely work in progress, and we definitely can be, we can look at that as one of the areas for improvement, Chair and the members. And then I'm hoping that going forward, we'll be able to report much more stronger performance, because the pipeline is fairly strong also for the market-to-market municipalities. And again, the in terms of the shortage of water, and are we working with any municipalities in the Free State? I know that, yes, there are some municipalities, the number of municipalities within the Free State that we are working with, Mr. Simon, in this regard. It's just that I can't remember if actually I can recall some of them offhand, but I know there is quite a number. We can give the details at a later stage. If Mr. Mhlongo were here with us, we would be able actually to provide much more details in this regard. But also we do work with the Mangaung municipality, the metro as well in this regard. The post offices project, it's a SADC initiative. We're not sure how far it's going to go, and because it is really, really going to be about the function of investments that they are prepared to make in this regard, the technology that actually they are able to employ and deploy and invest in, as well as the skill sets. Other post offices in other parts of the world have been able to adapt quite well, and they are very competitive, but on the continent, many post offices are as good as dead. And again, I think it talks to the collapse of governance, it talks to the lack of investments in their infrastructure and platforms, and their failure to pay attention to the competition actually that has come in. But I guess the last mile in terms of the likes of Amazon's that actually they are now doing in terms of courier services and express delivery still offer some very interesting opportunities. But there is a private sector, they tend to be doing this job much more better than the government post offices. Because these post offices will have to survive if these governments are able to invest. And I don't think they have what it takes to make these kinds of investments. Well, but I think the jury will be out in terms of how far this project is going to go. And I know that also Mr. Jamu asked some questions in terms of what are the challenges that has been led by the bank. And now we're on track to deliver on our mandate in terms of the rest of the continent. I think my answer there is a fatigue, yes. But we also understand that the risk, given the threat of recession and the threat and the monetary tightening that we see, and as a result, due to the geopolitics of Russia and Ukraine, and the food inflation and energy inflation as a result of those geodynamics, are also impacting on a number of countries on the continent. And we are anticipating that, yes, maybe some countries might be heading for default, but we hope that they will be able to behave and act like Zambia did and look at restructuring their finances and make sure that they are able to then embark on a road to better performance. And I'm also grateful that the Chinese government has eventually come to the party. And we were actually one of the parties in terms of the Zambian debt restructure as part of the G20 initiative. And eventually the Chinese government came to the party and was able to engage, as the Chinese government is one of the biggest lenders to the sovereign on the continent. So that is a very good development, and I hope that it will go a long way in making sure that the economic performance and the possibilities for the continent improves. The issue of, there was also a question on how we are doing on the support of and technical support to Munis in the last financial year. We have actually done quite a lot as we visited those various municipalities that we were working on to try and support and to unlock their infrastructure. But again, the huge provincial inequalities and the request by the committee for the TBSA to work much more stronger with SALGA and COFTA and traditional affairs, it is something that we are still working on. The D-Labs are also looking into that, because we do believe that we need a much more different interventions to be able to stand a better chance in these areas. It is not going to be an overnight at all. We are quite seized with that reality, but it is something that will require a concerted effort and a strong partnership at all spheres of government, especially national and provincial, to try and unlock the potential of many of our provinces, looking into what are the competitive advantages of our provinces. I'm very positive that if really we work well together and look at the possibilities we can be able to do. We are importing way too much. I'm also very much encouraged when I look at other countries that have come from importing everything into producing quite a lot for themselves and creating jobs for their populace, as well as now contributing to very strong foreign reserves for their nations. But it's also a function of very strong governance, very strong leadership, and very strong internal control systems that we must all strive to have at all areas, to make sure that for each and every cent that we have, we look at that preciousness of that cent and make sure that we want to get the best possible value out of that cent and rent for the betterment of our societies. And Chair, you did actually, you spoke about the TBSA and how we're operating in terms of the commercial space. And as I said, that yes, we would love to be much more supported, and we would definitely love to do much more than we currently are. We would love to take much more higher risk than we currently are. But that is going to also be a function of how well we are working with the Minister of Finance and various government ministries, as well as provincial and local governments, to try and see what is the best potential that the bank can play to unlock and improve and help in the economic recovery of the country. And I do believe that we are still actually performing way below our true potential as the DFI. And I think the equity that we've been able to generate over the years could really be put into much more stronger use. But it's going to be the function of how are we then regulated, and how are we then supported and oversighted so that we can be able to deliver much more. The land bank contagion effect on DBSA has been quite huge, given that it even limited us from accessing funding from some of the international players, because they had exposure to the land bank. But as to the relationship between DBSA and the land bank, we relate as sister TFIs, and we are relating in terms of the just transition commitment by the sovereign. But we are still actually looking at how we can be able to work together with land bank insofar as the water infrastructure is concerned, because agriculture uses water, and in actual fact, agriculture uses about 60% of potable water in terms of global standards. So in South Africa is a very water scarce country. I think here is an opportunity for us to say, how can we learn from other nations that actually have employed certain technologies to minimize agricultural water usage, at the same time optimizing their agricultural outputs. And it's, for instance, the drip irrigation system and technology that we can be able to really look at, and to look at how we can support the small-scale farmers and urban farming, as we are seeing the development across the globe, employing a number of people and being done much more cost-effectively, and also ensuring the security of food for the peoples of their countries. I think there really is quite a lot of room in that case, Chair, and we will continue to explore that and to see how we can be able to work together. But there are a few projects that we are looking at between, I think, between the Mhale, remind me here, that goes all the way to the Northern Cape, and it talks to the mining, it talks to the farming and communities as well. It's Mhale, what is the name of that project? It starts from the Free State, it goes all the way to the Northern Cape. I've just forgotten the name, Chair, that we were actually looking at ourselves, the land bank, as well as net bank in this regard. So there are some projects currently that we are looking at to try and see if we as DFIs and the private sector can cooperate for much more better infrastructure. The just transition, I will try and see if maybe the chair wants to come in this case. Maybe I will then just add on the chair's comments if needs be. Chair?
Thank you. Thank you, CE. If I could, I'll come to the just transition. I just want to come back to the question about being a DFI or a DFI that is more commercial. The DBSA is part of the International Development Finance Club, which is a club of international development finance institutions, I think about 27 of them around the world, many of them from the Global South. And DBSA is leading an initiative within that club to conduct research on how DFIs can invest in the just transition, not just decarbonization, but the just transition. And what's emerging from this research is a very significant identity for DFIs, which have tripled in size since 2007 in terms of their total assets. And the reason for that is their commitment to the same things that we as DBSA are committed to, which is long-termism, long-term development, risk, risk appetite, but most importantly of all, for what is now called blended finance, how we leverage private sector funding into the development process. And I think those three things actually define us as a DFI. But in the conversation that's taken place within the board and with the executives, we decided a few years ago to take a closer look at the D in the DBSA, which has tended to be a bit too small. And so the strategy has been, how do we turn this small D into a big D? And that's really what led to the formulation of what we call our development position, which in turn informed our investments in the D-Labs and other initiatives. But what is a developmental perspective on the energy transition, which is about decarbonization? And that's what the just transition is about. But just before I get there, just to deal with this commercial question, I think we need to be honest and say that the land bank contagion did affect us. Trust in state-owned enterprises, financial institutions in particular, did go down, and we are dependent on access to capital in the South African capital markets. But that has become increasingly difficult because of this decline in trust as a result of what happened to the land bank. And so we have started to explore, and we've said this publicly, the possibility of shifting our prudential authority from the Ministry of Finance to the South African Reserve Bank so that we we are seen by other banks as part of the family. And in that way, we hope that we will be able to return to accessing the South African capital markets. Until then, we are more dependent on accessing foreign capital markets in euros or dollars. And that is what is driving up our cost of capital, which in turn contradicts the Big D strategy. So we can't really do development on a large scale if our cost of capital is rising. So we have to resolve that contradiction. And we are making progress, I think, in that regard. On the just transition, which really brings this into focus, there are basically four ways to respond directly to your question, what does this mean? In the South African dialogue, and incidentally, South Africa leads the world on this conversation. We were the first country in the world to include the just transition in our NDC tabled at COP 25. I think it was the first time we've tabled it. So the just transition in South Africa means four things. Which are not easily aligned. The one view is just rapidly decarbonize so that we can do economic growth. Then there will be trickle down benefits for the poor. So that's the one. The second is, no, that's not good enough. You need to invest in mitigating the negative social consequences for workers and communities dependent on the coal value chain. So that's what some mean by the just transition. It's a kind of welfarist response to the consequences, if you like. The third position is, yes, we need decarbonization. Yes, we need social mitigation, but we also need upstream industrialization to re-industrialize the South African economy. And that position essentially argues that that renewables-led industrialization could be the biggest industrialization program since 94, creating tens of thousands of jobs in a number of different localities, but in particular in Mpumalanga. So that's a much more ambitious vision, and it's dependent on the price of renewables being right. If the price gets driven down too low, then you can only build renewables by importing from China, which is good for Chinese workers and not for South African workers. And then the fourth position emerges from the union movement, which is just transition is about a post-capitalist transformation. So I think where the bank is at, I think we're more in the third position. And what that means practically is connecting three of our initiatives. The one is the infrastructure fund, which is an obvious vehicle for massive investments in the grid, which is key for the just transition, because that's a big, the big door swings on a small hinge, and that hinges the grid. The second is IPP, which we continue to support, which is generation. But thirdly is the D-Lab, which is really a very ambitious intervention in what is called the just part of the just transition. So those three, if you see them in a more systemic way, are the building blocks in practice, institutionally, of a just transition. And if I just end up with one comment, last time we met, you did ask this question, what can be learned from the DBSA experience, which triggered me to think quite deeply about it and also informed our decision to collaborate in this international review with the International Development Finance Club. I think there are three. The one is board governance, especially based on my research on what went wrong in boards during state capture. Building a collective board culture is critical. When board members see themselves as mini-me ministers in charge of portfolios and then with executive authority to give instructions, that's when things go wrong. So building a collective board culture is, in my view, critical. Secondly, recruiting talent. And you only recruit talent when people feel that their work is going to be valued and they can collaborate productively and creatively with the board. If you have a dysfunctional board, you're not going to recruit good talent. And thirdly, it means managing the political interface. And as board chair, that's been my biggest challenge, to make sure that on key issues like, for example, setting bonuses, on appointing new board members and so on, that we have sufficient autonomy. And the Zondo Commission reports really, I think, enhance that. And finally, it means paying attention within the staff to culture, to leadership, and succession. And that's can't just be a periodical, it has to be a continuous process. So those are just some of my comments in response to your question about what we could learn. Thanks, Jeff.
Chair,
I think I've been fully covered by the chair chair of the committee, because it is actually something that we strongly believe that the just transition has got to be just, especially taking into account the marginalized communities and making sure that going forward our future is much more better and much more inclusive. But we are working on it both with local as well as our international partners in this regard.
Okay, thank you. Any follow-ups, please, members?
I know, Chair, through you as well, that the Honourable Ryder also asked that we give much more information in terms of the limitations by the PFMA. We are more than happy to share with the committee, through you, Chair, our written submission that we made to National Treasury, so that at least you can then have a full view in terms of how we're seeing it and how we're looking at it. We will share with you.
It might be also useful to send it to the Assembly Committee as well.
Oh, okay. Okay, we shall do that, Chair.
Send it to the Chair and the Committee Secretary. Okay. From what I can see in Nkululeko, there aren't any hands with follow-ups, right? So,
Not at all, Chairperson. There are no hands.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's no point carrying on just for the sake of carrying on. It's not productive, right? So, firstly, I would like to thank you, Patrick, for a very, very comprehensive set of answers. And, you know, the work that DBAC does is of such a wide scope, such a wide range, that we don't have the skills or capacity to assess everything you say. And we go by our own staff that helps us. But, you know, as politicians, we can sense and understand that you're doing well as things go in this country. So we'd like to congratulate you and wish you well, you and the board. I think that, Mark, your response now has been very, very helpful on the just transition. Hands up those of us here who knew that it was South Africa that set the pace for this. But anyway, the ultimate test is what happens in practice, because we are so good on ideas compared to, I'm sure we'll all agree, what we do in practice. But I haven't come across it like this. I don't know, maybe other members of this committee have. There's four aspects that were set out by you, Mark. Also, I think your explanation or your answers for what it is that makes for you as DBAC doing well compared to other public entities are insightful, but also when one considers it, colleagues, it's not rocket science. Actually, these are things that, we should know, and I think we do know. It's just that we don't do it. In different forms, we have raised the things Mark has raised in very many forums and areas of both parliament and government. Now, for example, most of the things he said in that regard are what we were saying in, around 2009 onwards, even earlier, I think, about what would make for successful municipalities. So it's just a great pity that we don't implement the insights we have. But it is very good work, Mark, you and your board and Patrick and your team are doing. And we acknowledge all of you on this platform that come from DBSA and others who are not here. We thank you very much for your input. We think that you're doing well, I think, overall. And I think, the fact that the EFF can actually, you know, say, you know, they welcome, and then the questions they raise don't undermine saying, Simon, that we welcome, you know. So that too is a barometer of how well you are doing. So I really think, you know, in a way, given the sort of things, you know, Mark, Patrick, you may not appreciate this, but given the sort of issues we have to deal with in terms of our oversight over the entities that fall under Treasury usually, it's like a breath of fresh air engaging with the DBSA. We don't think all, well, you yourself are to some other extent admitting it, but we think you're doing well. So it's good to have you here. It's in a way inspiring, uplifting. And if we can be good here in this sphere, it also shows, you know, we can be good elsewhere because there are other Mark Swillings and Patrick Lamini's around. They come in all shapes and sizes and forms. And it's just that they're not being deployed by the state, not being deployed by the government. And you know, we've been very narrow-minded about the way we draw on skills of civil society, you know, in particular academics and other experts. We sort of shoot ourselves in the foot. I saw something that I didn't quite read. I browsed through it quickly this morning. I think it's Adrian Basson, was it yesterday, News 24 editor, talking about the meeting they had last Thursday. Some of you might have been there, about, you know, where the country is going and what can be done to fix it. And he said, well, the thing that struck him was how much of talent this country has and it can be fixed. The problem is with us politicians, we don't give people enough space. And increasingly, the governing party is acknowledging that the state is weak. The governing party is weak. We need civil society and we need to harness all the skills we have in this country like never before. We need to create the mood we had in the first 2 to 3 years after the democratic breakthrough, when we initially had the idea of the RDP, but most of us know what happened then. All right, thanks very much to you, DBSA. Best wishes. Thanks for your input. Good luck. And comrades and colleagues, we shall meet tomorrow in the Appropriations Committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Nice to see you again.